Yashoda Nanda Navraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nanda Navraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tiravana Chari Yamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Jaya Prabhupada 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada Shishi Kishore Kishore Ki Jai, Shishi Gorni Tai Ki Jai, Shishi Jagannath Bali Srimati Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutane, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine, Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pachanine, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pascha Deshatanine. Please repeat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 15. And we were asked to do texts 58, 59, and 60. So we'll chant together text 58. Please repeat. Abadito pihya baso. Abadito pihya baso. Yathavastu taya smritaha. Yathavastu taya smritaha. Durga tat pad aindriyakam. Durga tat pad aindriyakam. Tadvad artha vikalpitam. Tadvad artha vikalpitam. Abadito piya baso. Yathavastu taya smritaha. Durga tadvad aindriyakam. Tadvadartha vikalpitam. Durga tat pad aindriyakam. Tadvad artha vikalpitam. Abadito piya baso. Yathavastu taya smritaha. Durga tat pad aindriyakam. Tadvad artha vikalpitam. Abadito piya baso. Yathavastu taya smritaha. Durga tat pad aindriyakam. Tadvad artha vikalpitam. Abadito pya mahaso. Yathavastu taya smritaha. Durga tat pad aindriyakam. Tadvad artha vikalpitam. Word for word synonyms, please repeat. Apaditaha. Rejected. Api. Although. He. Certainly. Abhasaha, a reflection. Yata, as. Vastutaya, a form of reality. Smitaha, accepted. Durgatatvat, because of being very difficult to prove the reality. Aindriyakam, knowledge derived from the senses. Tadvat, similarly. Artha, reality. Vikalpitam, speculated or doubtful. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Although one may consider the reflection of the sun from a mirror to be false, it has its factual existence. Accordingly, to prove by speculative knowledge that there is no reality would be extremely difficult. Please repeat. Although one may consider the reflection of the sun from a mirror to be false, it has its factual existence. Accordingly, to prove by speculative knowledge that there is no reality would be extremely difficult. Purport. The impersonalists try to prove that the varieties in the vision of the empiric philosopher are false. Now, why do they want to do that? Why would somebody want to go through the trouble of trying to prove that the varieties in the vision of the empiricist is false? So this chapter is entitled Instructions for Civilized Human Beings. What does civilized mean? We know what human beings are. So what does it mean to be a civilized human being? Proper behavior. We can't be civilized human beings if we don't know what civilized human beings are. Those who have transcendental knowledge. Yeah, that's the Vedic definition of civilized. So the dictionary definition of civilized is those humans who are advanced culturally, politically, economically, scientifically, morally even. But the Vedic definition of civilized human being is one who knows the purpose of life. So there are two categories of persons that have been described in the recent verses. There's those that are called that are on the path of karma marg, the karma marg. They're following the what's called pravritti marg, also called the pitri yana in previous verse. This path is for persons who consider atma prayojana, or the real self-interest of the self, to be material enjoyment, and to improve or increase or expand that material enjoyment is the purpose of life. They can go in their practice of karma marg, they can go all the way up to the moon planet, Chandraloka. But then after so many lifetimes of enjoying and then having to come back to Earth, they start to wonder, is there something more to this picture? So then one may enter what's called the Jnana Marg, or Nivritti Marg, or which was referred to here as Devayana. And that is the path for persons who realize that the purpose of life is not to enjoy. Their conception of Atma Prayojana, or the real self-interest of the living entity, is to do away with all Icha and Dvesha, with all desire and envy. They can go all the way up to Brahma, Brahmaloka, or Siddhaloka, the Brahman realm. So the empiricists, because they believe that the purpose of life is to enjoy, they therefore conclude that whatever they perceive is reality. Where is the question of enjoyment if there are not objects to enjoy? If you define yourself as the enjoyer, then there must be objects to enjoy. Duality. Those who have defined the purpose of life to be free of such duality. Why? Because they know it leads to suffering. One tries to enjoy the sense objects, but then what happens after you do that? Then there's the bad aftertaste. You know, it tastes good when you drink it, but then there's a bad aftertaste. So with every form of enjoyment in this world, there is a bad aftertaste or reaction. Or one has to work so hard just to get that little piece of pleasure, so-called pleasure. So the persons who traverse the Jnana Marg, they want to do away with duality, because they understand that this is the source of our problem. We see enjoyer and the enjoyed, and it ends up with our suffering, and it ends up with our taking birth here again, so therefore let's do away with that. So what they want to do is prove that there is no reality, that the material world is false. And they can do this by many different types of arguments. A simple one. The objects that we perceive, how can you tell if they're real or not? Well, the empiricist will say, I see the apple. It looks beautiful. I can smell the apple. It smells sweet. I can taste the apple. It's delicious. I can feel the apple. It's crisp. And I can hear the apple, it goes crunch, crunch when I bite into it. So it must be real. Because they accept pratyaksha pramana, evidence acquired by the senses to be a legitimate and complete and correct analysis of reality. So my pratyaksha pramana is that this apple is real. Now, the jnanis, they will argue, oh, that apple is real? Yeah, I saw it, so I know it's real. Oh,
Okay, what's happening? You have this apple, so-called apple. Light is reflecting off of it. The process of seeing the apple is light is reflecting off that object. And it enters the eye. And the lens, the cornea and the lens, bend that light. It's just light coming in. And so the light is now bent and it hits the retina, which is at the back of the eyeball. And on that retina, there's so many, 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 many cells, light-sensitive cells called rods and cones. And they pick up the light. From those rods and cones, then, electric signals are sent through the optic nerve. This is all happening in a little space like this, you know. So through the optic nerve, then, electric signals are sent to the brain, to the central processing unit. So in the brain, the analysis is made. Oh, this contrasting light, this much intensity, these colors, whatever, whatever. Shape, distance, some perspective like that. And when the vision hits, goes to the brain, it's actually upside down. So the brain has to invert it. Anyway, the process of vision is very complicated. So, but what's happening in the brain? Okay, a whole bunch of electric signals got sent there. Wow. Then the mind and the intelligence analyze those signals, just like a airplane pilot might have so many dials and gadgets and signals in front of him when he's cruising around here. And he has to analyze all these things and interpret them. Oh, I'm going too fast, or I'm starting to lose altitude, whatever. They have to check all these things and interpret them. So the brain sees all these signals coming in. Now the mind and the intelligence interpret them. So the mind says, oh, that's an apple. I could bite it and it would taste good. Or the mind is saying, ooh, it's an apple, yuck, I don't like apples. It's all just interpretation. And what's it all based on? What's the interpretation based on, ultimately? Why one person, you know, the human, sees a pile of stool and they go, ooh, and they run away. But a pig, you know, same chemical makeup, basically, the same way that, you know, the nose and the eyes and everything basically work like humans' eyes and nose and everything work. But the pig sees that pile of stool and goes, What's the difference? The same electrical signals going to the brain. It's based on the desire of the living entity. The false ego identifying the self as this kind of an enjoyer. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says like that, that when one leaves this body, the subtle body carries the soul from one physical body to the next physical body. And what's that subtle body carrying with it? A whole bunch of baggage. You know, like the airplane carries you over the Atlantic Ocean. It's not just carrying you, it's also carrying all your baggage. So the subtle body is carrying you, the soul, from one body to the next. But what's it also carrying? It's carrying all your baggage that you're attached to. What is that baggage? Your conception of life. Your conception of what kind of an enjoyer you are. Your conception of what is Atma Prayojana, or my real self-interest. So that subtle body carries different conceptions of life. Therefore, one is born with a different type of nose, a different type of eye, ear, everything. So one gets the senses of a human, another gets the senses of a pig, etc., etc. So all of the senses, whether it's seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, they all end up being described as electrical signals in the brain. So the jnani will therefore conclude that the objects are not real. They're just a figment of your imagination. It's just the mind interpreting electric signals in such and such a way. And what is the mind ultimately? A product of Brahman. Third canto describes how from that unvariegated Brahman, how the modes of nature interact and different varieties of material elements come about. So, this is a constant conflict then. So going back to the purport, the impersonalists try to prove that the varieties in the vision of the empiric philosopher are false. It's a constant debate. The impersonalist philosophy, Vivartavad, generally cites the acceptance of a rope to be a snake as an example of this fact. According to this example, the varieties within our vision are false. Just as a rope seen to be a snake is false. So just like we were saying, the empiricists perceive all these electric signals as an object for me to enjoy. In other words, the rope is a snake. But the jnani sees, no, that snake is false. There's no actual object called snake. It's just a rope. It's just electric signals. It's not an object for you to enjoy. The Vaishnavas say, however, that although the idea that the rope is a snake is false, the snake is not false. One has experience of a snake in reality, and therefore he knows that although the representation of the rope as a snake is false or illusory, there is a snake in reality. Prabhupada would often give the example of a mirage. You're in the desert, or you're on a hot road, in the, you know, dry, hot road, and you perceive water. You've had this experience when you're driving around and you perceive water so many yards ahead. But when you get there, there's not a drop of water. But you saw the water. So it's called a mirage. It's false. It's illusory. You saw illusory water. But that does not mean, therefore, there is no such thing as water. There is such a thing as water, but we've been perceiving the false one. But the fact that we perceive a false one must indicate that there's a real one. So same with this snake and rope analogy. So similarly, this world, which is full of varieties, is not false. It is a reflection of the reality in the Vaikuntha world, the spiritual world. The reflection of the sun from a mirror is nothing but light within darkness. Thus, although it is not exactly sunlight, without the sunlight, the reflection would be impossible. Similarly, the varieties of this world would be impossible unless there were a real prototype in the spiritual world. The Mayavadi philosopher cannot understand this. But a real philosopher must be convinced that light is not possible at all without a background of sunlight. Thus, the jugglery of words used by the Mayavadi philosopher to prove that this material world is false may amaze inexperienced children, but a man with full knowledge knows perfectly well that there cannot be any existence without Krishna. Therefore, a Vaishnava insists on the platform of somehow or other accepting Krishna. Tasmat kenapyupayena mana Krishna niveshayat. The Mayavadi philosophers will always be pushed into the corner, backed up into the corner, if they argue with a Vaishnava philosopher. Because the impersonalists are saying, see that water in the mirage? It's illusory. I will agree, yes. It is false. But then they will conclude, erroneously, with no really good argument, that therefore all water is false. There's no such thing as water. But the Vaishnavas are understanding that if anything is false, it must indicate that its real prototype exists somewhere. Otherwise, where would the idea of the illusion come from? Illusion is like a shadow. You can't have a shadow if you don't have an object that is projecting the shadow. So with word jugglery, it's very easy to fool foolish persons. That's the definition of a foolish person, somebody that can get fooled. They don't know how to see the fallacies in the logical or rather illogical arguments that are put forth. So the Vaishnavas, the Mayavadis understand that behind everything is Brahman. And indeed, the third canto explains like that. Everything comes from Brahman. But they say the buck stops there. The Brahman is unvariegated, no duality, just a blank. But just as sunlight has to come from the sun, the all-pervading bright Brahman must come from the source of Brahman, Bhagavan. So this is where the Vaishnava philosophy now can give an answer as to where does the Brahman come from. So then Prabhupada finished that paragraph by citing how the Vaishnavas insist on the platform of somehow or other accepting Krishna. This was said, Tasmat kenapyu payena mana Krishna niveshayat, in relation to the different types of relationships people have with Krishna. Narada Muni was explaining to Yudhishthira Maharaj, it doesn't matter if one approaches Krishna out of love, curiosity, envy, lust, competition. However you approach Krishna, somehow or other approach Krishna. Because he's the basis of everything. Brahmanohi pratishtaham. He's the basis of that Brahman. So without that knowledge of Krishna, one will just be like a foolish child, fooled by the word jugglery of the Mayavadis. We were just reading, I guess it was last night, in the Lilamrita, Kirtananda was kind of arguing with Prabhupada a little bit. Prabhupada was speaking strongly about the Mayavadis, and Kirtananda said, why are we always harping on the Mayavadis? You know, if we should rather just go after the atheists. So we should call people atheists, not Mayavadis, and we should go after the atheists. Why are you so harping on the Mayavadis? And Prabhupada turned to him and he said, because you are one. That you don't want to fight against the Mayavadis means that you are one. So we have to understand the logical arguments against the Mayavadis, otherwise we'll be affected.
So then Prabhupada continues, when we raise our unmixed faith to the lotus feet of Krishna, everything is revealed. Unmixed faith. Not that we're holding on to some faith in demigods or scientists or something. It's unmixed faith. Then everything will be revealed. Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita 7.1, Maya sakta mana parta yogam yunjan manashraya asamshayam samagram mam yathad yasyasi tachchanu. Now hear, O son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Simply by raising one's staunch faith in Krishna and his instructions, one can understand reality without a doubt. Asamshayam samagram mam. So without putting our faith in Krishna, one can't understand reality. One will either conclude that what we see here and feel and smell and taste and all that, this is the reality for me to enjoy, or they'll conclude that there is no reality. Both positions are wrong, and they constantly fight with each other, but what they don't understand is that they're both wrong. But they don't have a third party to come in and set the picture straight. One can understand how Krishna's material and spiritual energies are working and how he is present everywhere, although everything is not him. This philosophy of achintya bheda abheda, inconceivable oneness and difference, is the perfect philosophy enunciated by the Vaishnavas. Everything is an emanation from Krishna. But it is not that everything must therefore be worshipped. Speculative knowledge cannot give us reality as it is, but will continue to be nefariously imperfect. So-called scientists try to prove that there is no God and that everything is happening because of the laws of nature. But this is imperfect knowledge, because nothing can work unless directed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, why would scientists want to prove that there is no God? Why do they want to say it all just goes on by the laws of material nature? Why does empiricism and belief in God have to be bad bedfellows? Why can't they have a partnership? Exactly. The reason one is an empiricist is because they're trying to prove that this is the reality and that there's nothing more and there's nothing less. They cannot accept the arguments of the jnanis that this world is not real, because that would leave them in limbo. They have to enjoy something. They can't just stand there with nothing. Nor can they accept that there's a spiritual prototype world and that there's God, because that would threaten my position as the enjoyer, the proprietor, the controller. So all these things are motivated. Empiricism is simply motivated by the desire to be the enjoyer. And Mayavad is only motivated by the desire to be free of suffering. The duality causes suffering, so therefore let's do away with duality. So Prabhupada said, therefore scientists try to prove there is no God. But this is imperfect knowledge, because nothing can work unless directed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 9.10 by the Lord himself. Mayad yakchena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena konteya jagadvipari bhartate. This material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti. and it is producing all moving and unmoving beings. By its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya gives this note, Durga Tattvad Artatvena Parameshvarenaiva Kalpitam. The background of everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sadurlabha. This can be understood by a Mahatma who is perfect in knowledge. Such a Mahatma is rarely seen. So we're supposed to do two more verses, so I'm going to read through 59. Translation of 59. In this world there are five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether. But the body is not a reflection of them, nor a combination or transformation of them. Because the body and its ingredients are neither distinct nor amalgamated, all such theories are insubstantial. Purport: a forest is certainly a transformation of the earth, but one tree does not depend on another tree. If one is cut down, this does not mean that the others are cut down. Therefore, the forest is neither a combination nor a transformation of the trees. So, this is a little bit more of a purport here. Okay. Here's the point that's being made. Here's a forest. There's like hundreds and hundreds of trees in the forest. So what is a forest? You say, well, it's a combination of trees. You put a bunch of trees together and you have a forest. Okay. If the definition of a forest is that it's just a combination of trees, then what happens if I cut 6, 10, 12, 20 of them down? Do you no longer have a forest? No, the forest is still there. But wait a minute. You just said that the identity of the forest was that it is a combination of those trees. So if you take any one of them away, what to speak of 10, 20, 30, how do you still have the forest? Because part of the ingredients that combined together to make that forest are being deleted from that picture. So how do you still have a forest? Similarly with the body. What's the body? Well, it's a combination of all the parts of the body. You know, you put a bunch of organs and a bunch of tissues, and you put them all together, and that's the body. Well, okay. Well, what if you lose a leg? Well, that's the body still there. What if you remove an organ in surgery? Yeah, the body's still there. Wait a minute. You just said that the body is a combination of all the parts. So if you remove any of the parts, how can you say you still have the body? So the question still remains, what is a forest? What is a body? This is the jnanis arguing here. In their attempt to prove that the body is not real, in their attempt to prove that nothing in this world is real, they analyze it like this. That ultimately everything is made up of the five elements. So can you say whatever that thing is, whether it's a forest or a body or the universe or whatever, can you really say that it's real? You can't say that the body, for example, is a reflection of the elements or a combination or a transformation of the elements. Because the body and its ingredients are neither distinct. What does that mean? They're not distinct. What it means is you can't put over here on this side of the scale all the parts of the body and on this side of the scale the body and say you have two different things. There's no such thing as a body without any parts. Right? So the body doesn't have its distinct identity, is what's being argued here. So because the body and its ingredients are not distinct, nor are they amalgamated, meaning they're not just all combined together to make the body, because when you take some of them away, you still have a body. Gives you kind of a headache to think about it. But this is what the gyanis do with their time. This is exactly what they do. All these intellectual exercises that, you know, when you exercise a muscle, it hurts at the end of the day. So they exercise their brain to the point of like massive migraine. Just to prove this point. So in the purport, Prabhupada said that the forest is neither a combination nor a transformation of the trees. The best explanation is given by Krishna himself. Maya tatamidam sarvam jagat abhyakta murtina matstani sarvabhutani nachaham teshvavastitaha. By me in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. Everything is an expansion of Krishna's energy. As it is said, Arashya Shaktir Vibhaiva Shuyate, the Lord has multi energies, which are expressed in different ways. The energies are existing, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead also exists simultaneously because everything is his energy. He is simultaneously one with everything and different from everything. See, only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to give this philosophy of Achintya Bhed Abhed. Without this understanding of Achintya Bhed Abhed, then we're stuck with either Bhed, meaning difference, or Abhed, meaning oneness, and both of them cause a headache. Both of them lead to dissatisfaction, and one actually ends up spending lifetimes toggling between the two. This lifetime, I'm a dualist, and I'm an enjoyer of the world. And another lifetime, because I'm fried with that, I become a monist. And then when I get fried with that, oh, maybe the material world's real after all. I go back to being the enjoyer. So without Chaitanya Mahaprabhu giving this philosophy of Achintya Bhed Abhed, we don't have a way out of that vicious cycle. So Prabhupada says, thus our speculative theories that Atma, the living force, is a combination of matter, that's what the neuroscientists are trying to prove these days, that consciousness is a combination of matter, or that matter is a transformation of the soul. In other words, the soul transformed, therefore, even if once upon a time there was a soul, it doesn't exist anymore, so get over it, right? Get over it. Join the material world. The soul transformed, it's no longer there. Or that the body is part of the soul. I don't mean to be critical or anything, but did you know that there's actually college students who call themselves Christians that go by this third theory? Many times I have challenged such students as to, like, what the real self is, and that there really is no need to bury the body because the body's not going to rise again, because that's not you. And they actually argue. I mean, I grew up Catholic. I never heard this argument, but whatever. They actually argue that, yes, we believe we are the soul, but we believe that we're the body and soul, and that the body actually is part of the soul, and that, like, when you die, your soul goes somewhere, and the body's in the ground. And then at the second coming of Christ or something like that, the body's going to resurrect and it's going to be like a perfect body, and the soul's going to enter, they're going to reunite. Somehow the soul and the body are going to reunite, and that's going to be your eternal Prabhupada says all these theories are insubstantial. Why? What does it mean, insubstantial? It's not standing on any substance, because the real substance is Krishna. It's all speculative. So Prabhupada now concludes the purport. Since all the Lord's energies are simultaneously existing, one must understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But although he is everything, he's not present in everything. The Lord must be worshipped in his original form as Krishna. He can also present himself in any one of his various expanded energies. When we worship the deity of the Lord in the temple, the deity appears to be stone or wood. Now, because the Supreme Lord does not have a material body, he is not stone or wood. Yet stone and wood are not different from him. So Prabhupada is saying, although in the temple the Archavigraha manifests a body made of stone or wood, he doesn't have a material body. Therefore, the Lord's original form is simply represented in that stone or wood. So, but when the stone and wood are represented in the Lord's original form, by worshipping the deity, we get the desired result. This is supported by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy, Achintya Bheda Bheda, which explains how the Lord can present himself everywhere and anywhere in a form of his energy to accept service from the devotee. So this is the perfect philosophy. And why is this philosophy perfect? How do you know that this philosophy is perfect? How do you know? We have three, so we now have three things. We have the philosophy of dualism, which says that you are the observer, which means you're the controller, proprietor, or enjoyer of that which you observe. Then we have the second philosophy, which is nothing that you observe is real. Everything's all one, simply Brahman. And then we have the third philosophy, that everything is real. What's wrong or false is your consciousness that you're the enjoyer of that, what you perceive. And the real philosophy is that everything you perceive is real and meant for Krishna's service. So how do we know which one's correct? Maybe I choose to believe in dualism, and you choose to believe in monism. Another person chooses to believe in a Achintya Bheda Bheda. What's the problem? We all have different beliefs. How do you prove that one's right and one's wrong? Okay, so the third one, Achintya Bheda Bheda, seems to harmonize everything. So it's like more inclusive and more complete. Gives it the proper perspective. Okay, but, you know, that's still theory. I mean, maybe I'm, that's just your assumption that the truth should harmonize everything. So what's the proof that out of these three theories, dualism, monism, and Achintya Bheda Bheda, that the third is the superior philosophy, the correct philosophy? Have you heard the expression, the test of the pudding is in the tasting? The proof of the pudding is in the tasting? So put it to practice. What happens, this is exactly why the empiricists get frustrated. They try to put to practice their theory. Okay, let's put it to practice. I'm the enjoyer, and everything I perceive is meant for my enjoyment. But what happens when I try to practice that? Everybody who's a halfway honest person will admit that this theory is not practical, which means it's not practical. go ahead and try it.
Things happen very quickly. Knowledge and detachment come about, and then in this other, in the other verse, Subhagum Samparo Dharmo, the result is yayatna supersedati. The self becomes completely satisfied and happy. So once happy, and he has realized knowledge, and he's detached. So it's like a very unique combination in this world.
Mm-hmm. And one doesn't have to just accept those words of scripture. One can actually realize that themselves,
yeah,
by practice. So the empiricists, they realize by practice that this theory is not correct, that I'm the enjoyer and everything that's in this world is meant for me to enjoy, because they don't enjoy. And the monists, they talk big, big words. They sound so intelligent, and their theory sounds really good when you really think about it. Yeah, everything ultimately, like we said, the object like the apple ultimately boils down to a bunch of electrical signals in the brain, which boils down to just a mental interpretation, which boils down to just Brahman, because the mind is a product of Brahman. So all the arguments sound really good, but it's not practicable that everything is one. And you can demonstrate this in your life. Next time you meet a monist, sometimes you meet people like this on the college campuses too, you know, try to argue that, oh, it's all one and everything. Okay, well, you want to do it? Can we do a little experiment? Let's do a little demonstration, okay? Do you have any money in your pocket? Oh, fantastic. Here, I need to, I don't have any money on me right now. I need to use some money to, like, demonstrate something. Could you, like, pull out some money? Oh, actually, the biggest bill you have would be really helpful. Oh, you have a $100 bill. Fantastic. Okay. Pay attention, all right? Here's the $100 bill. See it? Okay. Now you put it in your pocket. There. It's all one. The money that's in your pocket is in my pocket. It's all one. Okay, Harry Ball, nice talking to you. How will they react? They'll immediately become alarmed. So big, big words, but they can't practice it. So the fact that the theory is not practicable is proof that the theory is wrong. The fact that a theory can't be practiced is proof that the reality that they're painting with that theory is not reality. Have you ever tried that on somebody? You get interesting reaction from people. Especially if you keep a straight face and walk away. But the third philosophy, Achintya Bheda Abheda, can be practiced. Therefore, Prabhupada said, when we worship the deity in the temple, the result is obtained. You can go home and worship, you know, a statue, but you worship the Archivigraha and you actually get a result. So that's the proof. The proof of the pudding is in the tasting. And then we'll just end. There's one sentence translation, two sentence translation for text 60. Again, this is arguing from the Jnani impersonalist perspective. Translation, because the body is formed of five elements, it cannot exist without the subtle sense objects. See, the elements are the cause of the body. And all gross things only exist because of the subtle things existing before them. So the elements cannot exist without the subtle sense objects. Therefore, since the body is false, which was proved in the previous verse, that the body doesn't have its own identity, right? Therefore, it must be false. So since the body is false, the sense objects are also naturally false or temporary.
there's a distinction between the novice on a path and the adept on the path. So we're arguing for bhakti by saying that it produces atma supersedity, it produces detachment and so on. But the novice on the path often does not experience that, and even novices who have been practicing for years and years and years and years and years, they don't experience that. But the adepts on the path do experience that. And so if a novice were to inquire about that, we would tell them you have to make advanced
potency to change that person's heart. So if we're lacking spiritual potency, all we can do is intellectually, you know, debate with them and give persuasive arguments and logic and this and that. And at the end of the day, the person hasn't changed. So preaching is actually for our purification. How many of us who pose ourselves as some kind of preachers or presenters of Krishna consciousness, how many of us are actually convinced that I can't understand Krishna consciousness, what to speak of, give Krishna consciousness to others simply on the intellectual platform? So we have to become convinced to throw out the physical empiricism, to throw out the mental and intellectual devices, and offer my heart to the path. Krishna only reciprocates with our heart. He's not reciprocating with our physical or intellectual gymnastics. He's only reciprocating with our heart. So we have to bring the heart into the picture. And if persons like can't do that, well, move on to somebody else who might be able to. And unless until our heart has that potency, we won't be able to affect people. So the bottom line is we have to get the experience to give the experience to others. That's what Bhakti's all. Prabhupada uses the example in the first canto. One fire lights another fire. So if you're not on fire, how are you going to start somebody else's fire? There's no other solution. So Subal Prabhu, you had something? Then we'll stop there, because I think we went over time.
Thank you so much for the class, Mataji. I was trying to understand how to have it very clear in my mind, or at least approaching that. In terms of being an embodied soul, and the experiences that we have in this world, it says, you mentioned an apple, and then Prabhupada explains that it's a prototype that exists because there's a prototype in the spiritual world. So when you say, then the taste of an apple, the experience, the whole, the crispiness, etc., as you describe, that comes from the spiritual world. So all that variety of tastes, all the varieties of colors, all the varieties of experiences, the prototype is in the spiritual world. And right here, we have something that creates that experience. So the experience is real. In one sense, it's just temporary. That's what we understand, because the material matter is temporary. But the actual experience, there's an experience of, a particular taste, a particular color. So we having that experience through this body, and it's a real experience, right? Now, what it makes an illusion part is that we try to go through this experience not seeing that it's actually Krishna's energy. So taking Krishna out of the picture. So the argument of the Mayavadi seems, is that there's a rope and there's a snake, and then one is confusing a snake as a rope for a snake, but it's actually there's a rope and there's a snake. There is two things that there exist, two different. It's just one has a perception, one illusion that, oh, there's a snake, but it's a rope, but there is actually the existence of a rope and the existence of a snake. And so that argument is tremendously weak if I'm an empiricist. And so that there is an illusion, then is something that has to do with my perception, but not necessarily with reality. So how can they go to, you know, I mean, the only way they can prove something is just by juggling of words that you just get so confused that you say, well, I guess, you know, but otherwise it's a very weak argument.
And therefore, Prabhupada said, only a foolish, someone who's like a foolish child can actually go along with those arguments. Mm. It's, you know.
It's quite surprising because you see that some of these people are very, have a powerful intellect, you know?
Mm-hmm. Powerful intellect, but duskritina, right? Lots of merit or credit, but used for the wrong, in the wrong direction. So without Krishna, if there's not light, there has to be darkness, period. We shouldn't be surprised by that. If there's no light, there has to be darkness. So without Krishna, then there has to be ignorance, period. It's not surprising. We should actually rejoice because we see the formula works, that without lightness, there's darkness. Otherwise, if without lightness, there was still lightness, then Krishna consciousness would be wrong. So without Krishna, there must be darkness, period. Was there something? Jai Jagannath Prabhu was just saying that because everyone's so foolish in this age, that if you want to be a guru or a teacher that fools people, you'll have a very good business because you'll have lots of customers. Therefore, Mahatmana Sadurlabha, it's a very rare soul that will take to Krishna consciousness. So we'll just end there then. Thank you for your attention. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.